Welcome to We Are the Watchers.
Top of the day to you, Steph.
Top of the day to you.
I'm going to say top of the day to you, Mick.
Yes.
Because I don't remember what episode it is because it's the beginning of 2025. It's episode whatever, and we're here again trying to figure out what the date is. When you have to write down the date, have to figure out how to do that, and also talk about some stuff that we've watched over the year.
Do you know Christmas this year is going to be 25.
That's nice.
Cute, huh?
Yeah, I like that.
It's a long time to wait because it's January.
What I think is really funny is just talking to people. People are like, happy new year. Let's hope it's a good one. they quote John, I was going to say legend, John Lennon, but like with trepidation, they're like, we hope it's a good one.
Well, it starts with WTF. Because January 1st is on Wednesday.
Oh, yeah.
2nd's on Thursday. WTF.
WTF.
So the last time that happened was 2020, and we know how that went.
Oh, no. That doesn't sound good at all. I'm not happy about that. Now, Mick, how has your watching in 2024 been? Good, bad?
Well, it's one of those years where I feel like I didn't spend enough time watching movies. And like all of us, we run out of time to go out to the movies. Sometimes we just want to sit down and watch something while we're eating, or at the end of the day we're tired and we can't focus on 2 or 3, 4 hour movie, whatever it is. So we all just watch TV shows. So I feel like TV is really just overtaken movies for me this year, 2024. And that's not a bad thing because TV is great. There's so many TV shows to watch. It's off the chain. But I do miss going to the movies and sitting down with the popcorn and watching a film on the big screen. And it's never the same streaming it from a streaming provider. It doesn't feel like the real experience. I think I do miss going to the movies. But, you know, maybe I'll get back into it. Maybe a New Year's resolution.
That's a good New Year's resolution.
And Hoyts will be really happy
with
you.
Yeah, they will be really happy with you. But also it means that you pay 100% attention to it, right? Because you've just got your popcorn and your frozen Coke. And you don't have your phone out. I know some people do these days at that in the theatre.
No.
It's naughty and
where
you shouldn't.
Is that etiquette?
That's right. But it does force you to sit there and watch it and enjoy it. I feel like sometimes when I'm watching a movie at home, I am enjoying it, but my mind wanders. I quickly go and just grab that thing. Forgot to open that window, close that window. What did I order on Amazon again? When's that coming? And you're like, well, that's 15 minutes that I've not been paying
attention.
Yeah, I don't
know what happened.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think I'm going to adopt that New Year's resolution as well. More movies at the theatre or the cinema.
Yes. Let's all do it.
Let's do it. Speaking of doing it, let's do this top five. I reckon we should do what we did last year and probably every year. I probably say this every time. But we'll start at number five. We'll go down. We'll sprinkle in a couple of honourable mentions because I know, Steph, you've got a couple.
Yeah, just a few.
I've just got one. And if somebody grabs one of your top five, just say, me too, that was my number, whatever it is, and then we'll just have a chat about it. I think that's an easy way to do it.
Sounds good. Are we going to start with honourable mentions or just sprinkle them in later?
Well, I've got one honourable mention. Mick, do you have an honourable mention? We might as well start them and then Steph can sprinkle the rest of hers through.
I do, and this nearly made my top list, and I hope it's one that you guys have seen. It's a TV show on the ABC called Guy Montgomery's Spelling Bee.
Yes, I've seen that. What a fun
good one!
And didn't it start off like just as almost like what we're doing now, a Zoom chat, and it would be him during COVID, during lockdown. I'm going to make my friends do this spelling bee.
Why didn't I have that idea?
Exactly.
I would have loved to do that.
I'm so annoyed.
I'm getting you all on Zoom and giving you really tricky words.
Yes. Yeah. I'd be rubbish at it.
It's such a silly concept for a show, but Guy Montgomery, the Kiwi, stand-up comedian, he just makes it.
Yes.
fun and dumb and always really good guests, really diverse range of people. And and the set, oh, my God, the orange and the brown, you know, the retro suit he wears. Yeah, he's got the whole thing going on. I love it.
And Aaron there as well, just over there, Aaron just being absolutely ridiculous sometimes. Just like, what are you wearing? Why is that a thing? I really, I really hope that if you haven't watched it yet, that you watch it during summer, because I think it's got a nice summer vibe to it. Don't you reckon? Sit down after dinner or during dinner. Cricket's done. Put an episode of that on. That's a good day. That's a good day of watching.
It's just harmless, fun, silly game show. It's
exactly. So good. Exactly.
It's perfect.
My honourable mention, I thought I probably shouldn't put it in the top five, is because, it's not from 2024. I finally got around to watching Gavin and Stacey.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. A lot of,
I've only been telling her for
years, ever since it started. So I started watching it this year, and it was kind of in November. So the lead up, the build up to Christmas, because of course they had their Christmas special, which was going to be their final one. And I think maybe it was their second or third Christmas special that they'd done. And I know that because I watched them all in one go. It was just such a cozy show to watch.
So good.
In
so cozy.
The lead up to, you know, your festivities and your bad Hallmark Christmas movies. Not that it's a bad show, it's a great show. But I really enjoyed it. But I couldn't put it in the top five because
it's not
I guess.
Isn't it like 20 years old now?
Yes, it is.
17 years old. Yeah.
What is really weird, right, is when I think it started like 2007 or something, and I started watching it, I'm like, 2007, that's not that long ago. And then you watch when they're answering their mobile phone, you're like, oh, it is. That's
it's
a long time ago.
It's the technology that gave them away.
iPhone doesn't even exist yet.
No.
Yeah, very crazy. All right, one honourable mention, and then you can sprinkle them in as
you go. One of my – this would probably be my top honourable mention. So if we had a top six, this would be it.
Okay.
It is – and it's a funny one. It's an SNL skit that they did this year, so Saturday Night Live, and they did one called Domingo. Did you see it?
I don't know. Who is it?
So the special guest of that episode was Ariana Grande, but that's beside the point. It was a bunch of bridesmaids at a wedding singing a song to the bride and groom, essentially just giving away all of the secrets that the bride had in a total SNL way, where you're like, oh, my God, they said that. They said that. It was one of those ones that just came up on my feed and I watched it and I was cracking up watching it, and I would have watched it every single time somebody else posted it.
Oh, you
I watched
to
it again. They then did a follow-up of it where it was at the baby shower, and it spread so far and wide and became so popular that – the actor who played Domingo actually turned up at a Sabrina Carpenter concert as Domingo.
That's amazing. That's
and
so
the
good.
Whole crowd is just going, wow. Yes! So if you haven't seen it, do yourself a favour. It's a quick couple of minutes skit, but 100% worth it. So funny.
Isn't that interesting that Saturday Night Live has been around for more than, 40 years now, I'd say? And because of the skit nature, they've managed to make that transition from TV to social media so well. Like they're making skits that are just long enough for people with really short attention spans to watch still.
Or who don't want to stay up at 11 o'clock at night and watch a show. They want to go to bed because we're middle-aged.
It's a funny thing, Saturday Night Live. Yeah, it's 50 years this year.
50?
And
wow.
It's sort of in the zeitgeist a bit, because they also released a movie this year called Saturday Night, which is a real-time two-hour movie about the 2 hours before the very first Saturday Night Live episode.
What a premise.
And I just remember that I saw that at the movies.
Oh, actually, you did? Okay, I did see there the you movies. Go.
And I really did enjoy it. It's a hectic, frantic movie.
I can
it's
imagine.
It's not in my top five, I'm afraid. But it was fun. It was really, you know. Saturday Night Live is one of those weird shows where sometimes it nails it and sometimes it misses it completely. So it's really hard to judge.
Isn't there a doco either coming out or was released about it?
Maybe. I just know that this film that you're talking about had whoever – I can't remember the actor's name, but whoever played Chevy Chase just acted so much like Chevy Chase. It was incredible. Would you be thinking about that maybe? No?
No, I think there's a documentary series coming out as well about SNL. So, yeah, that's coming soon.
Yeah, there are different times that I've dipped in and out of SNL, and I've been there for that season or whatever. Yeah. And then people, cast members move on, and you're like, those people are not there.
Yeah, you get attached to cast members, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. So, I'd watch that doco. All right, let's get in to the top five. Mick, what's your number five?
Okay, my number five is something that came out at the very, very beginning of this year, of 2024, that I almost had to double check and see I hadn't put it in last year's top five because it was like that. It came out on January the 10th.
Oh, that's really early.
On Netflix. But it's really carried on as a standout for the year. Boy Swallows Universe.
Oh,
that amazing series based on the Trent Dalton book, set in Brisbane in the 80s.
Yep.
It's got my Parramatta Eels featuring in the book and the show, so I'm very happy about that. You know, tying in my love of footy, you know, do that as well. But it just has such a great storyline. It's quite confronting at times. It's sort of talking about domestic violence, but it's also talking about, you know, gang crime and drugs and, you know, the sort of gritty outer suburbs of Brisbane and what goes on there. And it's really highlighted by just some amazing acting performances, particularly from the kid who Felix Cameron plays, the young Eli Bell. And this kid, if you haven't seen that movie, which I feel like a lot of people have seen the show by now, but you know, he just stands out like so much so that you don't want him to grow up. Stay the little boy.
Yeah, that's right. There is a flash.
Because Eli Bell is actually played by three different people in this show, but it's the middle kid where he's 13, I think he is, in the middle age, where he just steals a show with the curly hair and the really great mannerisms. Just he almost acts like an adult, but he's still just a young kid. Amazing show. Travis Fimmel's in it with those really freaky eyes. Which
They're so, you know, piercing, I think is the word.
Piercing, Anthony Opali is in it. Phoebe Tonkin's fantastic in that. Simon Baker as well. This is an all-round great Australian cast. And it won a bunch of Logies and stuff of being seen around the world. But, yeah, for me, when I think back of my favourite things of the year, that's definitely in the top five. So
that's wild. I would have said that was out maybe 6 months ago. That's crazy that's January last year.
I thought it was like 2 years ago, to be honest.
Really? Yeah, right. I remember reading the book and just – I almost like devoured it really quickly. It was one of those ones that you just kept reading because you're like, this can't be what's happening. and kind of a autobiography, right?
Yes,
by Trent Dalton.
It's about sort of his experiences as a kid, around the area where he used to live and stuff like that. And another standout performance in his show is Adam Briggs, the rapper.
He
plays the pen pal in jail, and he just nails it. Just a really good character.
It's a good show.
And
it's there. It's on Netflix. Watch it now, Steph. What have you got? You've got one of your list.
I've got
one
of mine open now. I'm being a little bit cheeky because I think this one was technically released in 2023, but I watched it in 2024, I think. A lot of people might not have seen it yet. So I'm pushing it in.
Okay.
It is Live Italian.
You love that show.
I loved it. Mm. It's on Amazon Prime. It's a three episode, I guess, documentary, but it's hilarious regardless. And each episode focuses on a different host. And the one that I really connected with was the one hosted by Jack Whitehall.
Of course.
Who's hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. And so he's taken around Italy by certain locals.
And he's really annoying?
He's really annoying, but far out he's funny. And I think I connected quite closely with this one because my husband is Italian and Jack Whitehall made fun of a lot of things that I make fun of with the Italian food and the culture, and there were so many things that were brought up about the food and the relationship to the food that I went, I can understand that now. I've got that background knowledge. It was an absolutely laugh out loud experience that I would say when it switched to episode two with the next host, I was a little bit disappointed because I could have just watched Whitehall
that's go a thing all over. That. That's a thing with that.
But very, very funny.
I watched, I can't even remember what it was on. I think it was on the star section of Disney. I watched a whodunit called Death and Other Details. And it was set on a luxury boat, boat ship.
A mega yacht ship?
Sort of. Yeah, yeah. But it was an old, so it was set today, but it was an old ship, maybe it was made in the 1920s, something like that. They do explain it, but they.
Like a cruise ship size?
Yes, but small, like elite, intimate. And they get a whole heap of very rich people on this boat.
Sounds amazing.
And there's going to be an announcement. Something's going to happen. But before they can do that, a murder happens. And who done it? And, yeah, there's a...
Just everything about that I love.
There's a private eye.
Yeah, of course there is.
Rufus, played by Mandy Patinkin, who is just brilliant. And Rahul Kohli is in it as well, who you would have seen in iZombie and a few of those kind of horror series from Netflix. Mm-hmm. And a couple of other faces that you know how you're like, oh, yeah, I know that face. I've definitely seen them in stuff. And then you look and you're like, I haven't seen any of those things that they've been in. How do I know them? But I really...
One of those faces.
Yeah, well, you've got one of those actor faces. But I devoured this because I wanted to know what happened. It's got a real Agatha Christie kind of feel. Every episode you're like, obviously it's that person. Yeah. Obviously it's that person. Obviously it's that person. And you go through it all. And
you've just framed every single character.
Exactly,
in the show.
Exactly. And usually at the end of these kind of series, about 3 or 4 weeks, or not weeks, months afterwards, I'll go, I don't remember who did it, but I remember how much I enjoyed watching it. But I still remember who did it.
Did you?
I still remember, yeah.
So I was going to say, that means you could go back and enjoy it all over again.
I could,
again.
But I know.
We can't because you remember.
Okay, yeah, true. Number four for you, Mick.
Okay, we are going to a show which is into season 4.
Ooh.
Which not often that show catches my attention so much that I like mark the date down that it's being released and then just go binge
That's
it straight away.
That's a good sign.
But it is a show that was drip fed, so they release a couple episodes and then you got to wait weekly.
I like it.
And this show started in 2019, and since season 2, they've been dropping them every second year, which is really painful having to wait 2 years for a new season.
You forget of a show what happened really and you rely on that recap then, don't you?
Surely it's a risk to assume that people will remember to come back.
Well, Mick has.
I mean, Mick's marked it in his diary. He's got the alarm set and everything.
The show is The Boys, the ultra-violent superhero, satirical, too real and life TV show that I am a little bit obsessed with.
And you're not the only one. It's ever since season 1, it's been massive, right? The minute that comes out, people are talking about it week to week because they do drip feed those episodes.
But there are only 8 episodes. So why is it taking 2 years to make 8 episodes? I actually don't know when I think the next season is the last season. So season 5 already, you know, confirmed as the last season. So they're really building up to something big. I don't know if you two have watched it, but
I've
seen the first season. It was good.
It's good. It's disturbingly violent.
Yes.
In a way that you sort of don't want to watch it because it's quite gratuitous, mm-hmm. but you're also like, how are they going to kill this person next? You know, like it's full on. Like, and when heads are just exploding and there's just blood and guts everywhere, you sort of go, oh, that's really gross, but do it again. Like it's
another one.
Yeah. And you get a lot of it, but you sort of don't know what you don't want to watch, but you just can't look away.
So you're not desensitized to it.
Not quite. Just good. I'm getting there.
Okay.
But this season really carries on this theory of, and it's really sort of satirical in terms of looking at like Trump, for example. Trump is increasingly and has increasingly gotten away with more and more. And people just excuse him for it. He gets away with it. Similarly, in The Boys, these superheroes who sort of run the world, in effect, are getting away with more and more. And when the lead guy, Homelander, kills an innocent citizen in like a rally, all of his supporters just start cheering him. And this happened at the end of the season 3. Mm-hmm. And then this led into this season, and then he just gets more and more bold knowing that people will let him get away with whatever he wants to do, and then things start to escalate from there. Mm-hmm. So it's a seriously scary show in that you look at this and go, oh, this, even though they're superheroes and they've got all these powers,
it's if a
you
translate bit too that close to
the real world, mm-hmm. you start thinking, this is sort of happening right now, and these people who are fanatical fans about somebody are just getting sucked into this whole new world that we've never really experienced before.
Mm.
It's yeah, the show is full on. But Carl Urban, who plays Butcher, and Carl Urban is this Kiwi guy who's just such a great actor.
Mm.
What else has he been in? That's a good question. I think he's been in Bourne Supremacy in the movie. He's been in some Riddick films. I think he was even in the background of some Lord of the Rings stuff, being in New Zealand.
Yeah, funny that.
but he bungs on this really strange English accent, which also sounds Kiwi, but also sounds Australian. I don't know. It's a weird, weird accent.
Is he doing it on purpose?
I reckon he is.
Yeah
he's bunging it, but he's bunging it on really thick. But it just sounds like him, I think.
He's international.
I think it was even in Xena Warrior Princess, I've just noticed.
Oh, okay. Yes.
I feel like it's another rite of passage if you're a Kiwi. And you,
yeah,
you
surely.
Know, you were in Xena.
Yeah.
the extras moved on from that to Lord of the Rings. Yeah. For sure. The timeline's kind of.
I mean, they'd be successful.
Yeah, would have gotten a fair bit of money, or at least work, I should say, because Xena was around for longer than I think we remember.
Yeah. That was popular.
Yeah, it was really popular.
That was a great show.
What was your number four?
My number four was very different.
Oh, so it wasn't The Boys?
It wasn't The Boys.
Okay.
It was a look on a true case murder trial that happened. And it was an SBS On Demand production, and it's called The Jury, Death on a... I was about to say Death on a Suitcase. It wasn't...
They died on a suitcase.
I died waiting for suitcases and carousels. That's pretty bad. Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That's so funny.
Death on a staircase. That makes a little bit more
sense.
That's
better.
Now, what was interesting about this was, I guess in a way it was a little bit like a documentary, but it wasn't, because it was a total role play of a true case that happened in Sydney. And when I say a true case and a role play of it, it was word for word what happened in the court.
Wow.
And it was a spin-off of what happened. It was a UK series, and it was developed there to basically see, when you put 12 strangers together as a jury, what happens in the jury room. Is that called a jury room? Whatever. We'll call it a jury room. Like, what happens in there, and what are the conversations that happen that create a verdict? And is this the best type of judicial system that we could possibly have? From all of the accounts I've read, the UK one was quite convoluted because it followed a few different cases. So there was just too many facts and people and voices and all of that. So the Australian one focused on one that happened in Petersham in Sydney. And obviously, because this is a television show, they had chose 12 very different individuals to kind of, you know, get a broad cross-section of society, but people who had great biases towards this particular case. It was one of those shows. I don't often like things that come out once a week because I get really annoyed that I have to wait for it. This was the kind of show that I was getting agitated on the sixth day, waiting for day
when
seven
is it?
For it.
That's what I'm saying.
And I even forgot it was out on a Wednesday, and I sat down on a Tuesday to watch it, and it wasn't there. And I'm
that's
like,
annoying.
What?
Yeah, that's really annoying.
And I made sure I did not Google it. I did not want to find out what happened. I wanted to just see what happened in this particular jury. And it was really interesting because I was trying so hard to not be persuaded by what their conversations were, but to think what I was believing in. It is a very interesting look on society and the conversations that do happen. And it does make you come away thinking, is that the best way for us to convict people and to send people to jail, or to make a decision that somebody is innocent of a crime? It was really fascinating.
Do you reckon there'll be another season?
Potentially, but it would take a huge amount of research. Yeah, right. I mean, they had to make sure that this was a case that was all finished and done, all appeals exhausted, that there was no way of ever coming back and being like, oh, hang on, you made a TV show about it and you know, convoluted everything. Mm. So I think the background of it would have taken a huge production timeline before they even got to it. So I
perhaps did they reenact any of the actual like incidents, or was it all just set in the courtroom?
No, they do reenact it. So they have actors who are performing the solicitors and actors who are performing the victim and the perpetrator. And because there's a lot of conversation, a lot of wordy statements happening in the courtroom, they then act it out. So they, you know, essentially put them in their living room and you see sort of arguments without hearing them, because obviously we don't know what those arguments really were saying. They took this jury to the house, the actual house that it happened in, so that which is what happened to this jury. They were taken by the judge to there. So everything that this jury was given was what the original jury was given. But as a viewer, I guess we saw that a little bit more to make it a bit more
viewer-friendly. Have you been on a jury before?
No. Have you?
I was a couple of years ago, and it is one of the most full on things I've ever done. Obviously, it depends on the trial and what the case is, but it was a harrowing case that I was on, and it really drained me. It went for 2 weeks, it wasn't that long, but it just felt like I was just, by the end of it, I was just really drained.
Wow.
And like you said, a really good example was these 12 people in the jury room were such a great cross section, even just by natural, however it worked, that we got these 12 people. There was all different ages, all different, backgrounds, really different opinions. And so when, trying to get a unanimous decision out of 12 people who come from really different backgrounds is a super tricky thing. I think it's a good point to make. Like, is that the best way of doing it? Because you need a unanimous decision, and that's where to convict someone. Mm-hmm. And that's not always easy when things are – when sometimes the evidence isn't black and white.
Exactly. And they had experts, you know, lecturers and that, who work in criminology, and they were saying this is such a unique experience because we never see, none of us ever see inside a jury room apart from those jurors. So we don't really know what happens. And the conversations of like people going, well, I'm just getting ganged up on, and they're just yelling at me for having an opinion, so I'm just going to agree with them so we can go home.
Yeah, right.
You know, things like that where you go, hang on a second.
Yeah. Worn out.
Yeah.
Worn down.
Just because you guys have a louder voice doesn't make it right.
Mm.
It's very interesting. I suggest a watch.
Yeah,
The Jury.
The Jury, Death on a staircase.
Thank goodness it's not the rural juror from 30 Rock. The Roar. My number four is a film called The Holdovers that I watched on an aeroplane.
Show off.
You've got that one?
No, I don't, but I do like this.
It's a good one. It's a good movie. It was one that I would have wanted to have seen at the movies, at the cinema. I think it was had a strong enough storyline and performances that I would have been quite happy to sit there with my popcorn and my frozen Coke. But instead I stared at a tiny little screen on a aeroplane. But that also,
you're captivated.
I'm captivated. I don't have my phone on a long haul flight. So I really was interested and I was focusing 100% on that. Paul Giamatti plays a teacher at a boarding school in the late 70s, maybe, I think, probably, or early 1980s, where a lot of the boys, it's an all-boys school, go home or somewhere for Christmas, and then the holdovers are the ones that don't go home, and ends up just being in the, you know, after a little bit, just one guy. And so it's Paul, Mary Lamb, who is played by Divine Joy Randolph, who of course is an Academy Award winner. And it was just a great movie. It had that, you know, we're in it together kind of feel, where we, none of us would actually really be friends or even talk to each other outside of this boarding school. But yeah. We have to, we're taking care of this teenager who's not a naughty boy. He's just, it's just a bit sad that he's there by himself. And we find out a little bit more about all three of them. And there are a couple of other characters in there as well. But there are some really good scenes in it, and it's got a real feel-good feeling. And sometimes I like those stories that are really just about the people.
Yes.
It's not necessarily, you know, this storyline and the plot goes here and here and then suddenly we find this out. It's just like, no, let's just follow these guys whilst they're stuck in a boarding school by themselves.
Was it a book?
I don't know if it was a book. I'm not sure. But it was definitely nominated for some Academy Awards last year, and I was kind of going for it, you know. I was like, yes, come on.
Yeah. So I only just watched this literally last week.
Oh, really?
And it was like, it's a Christmas movie, right?
It's so a Christmas we're looking movie, for Christmas yeah. movies
to watch, and this one came up, and I didn't really remember that it had been nominated for, like, I think Best Picture.
Yes.
Earlier in the year. Started watching it, and yeah, just really, really, you're right. You fall in love with this movie and the characters. Paul Giamatti is bloody amazing in
He's
this.
He's really good.
And Divine as well. All of them. And it's not a big cast, it's a very nope. small cast. I feel like maybe they even filmed it during COVID or something.
Just yeah, because, probably. You
know, they
yeah.
couldn't have too many people around. I don't know.
Probably right. Yeah.
But beautiful. And I read the trivia that there's a lot of snow. It's sort of set up in, I think it's set in like New England around Massachusetts mm. somewhere. And they actually got these real snowstorms that happened when they filmed it. And that was perfect because it just really gives you this sense of sort of isolation.
Yes.
That the film really, I think, fed from.
Yes.
That they're isolated. They're stuck in this. I didn't realize they could just go to town, but they do. But, you know, I don't want to spoil it. It feels like they're like isolated in this college and they can't leave. It's like, oh, wow. But it's sort of the rules are that they're supposed to stay there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the rules.
Film.
And they're in charge of, well, Paul's character is in charge of the one student. Yeah, great movie. Mm. Yeah, a good Christmas film. You're right.
Mm.
Maybe that should be a Christmas recommendation for next year. What are we up to? Number three. Mick, what's your number three?
Number three is... This is another cheeky one a little bit, and in a little bit like Gavin and Stacey in that it's a show that I didn't pick up on at first, but it's not quite as old as that. I fell in love with Fisk this year, and I finally
yeah.
understand
yes.
why people love it.
It's so
and
good.
It's taken me three seasons. I've gone back to the beginning, right? I haven't started season – I actually haven't finished season three yet, but I've watched all of season one and two, and yeah, you just fall in love with the characters. Again – Our boy Aaron Chen turns up because yeah. he's in this show. But
Webmaster.
I mean, it's a feel good show, and I think being set in a lawyer's office, what is it called? Probate lawyer.
Yes.
It's such a that whole combination of people coming and talking about wills and death and all that sort of stuff, and then the characters are just so well written. Kitty Flanagan and I think her sister writes it together, and they've just made these amazing characters, really good storylines. The guests are awesome. Mm-hmm. And I haven't even seen all of it. I know there's more guests to come, but the ones that I've seen are just brilliant. And yeah, it's one of those perfect sit down, eat dinner, watching TV sort of shows when you don't want to have to think about anything.
Yeah.
And so season three is just yep. been wrapped up, but I think they're going to do another one as well. So I'm keen to see that keep going. But and the Julia Zemira character, oh my god,
the hair.
She doesn't even look like Julia Zemira.
No,
like, you know it is.
Yeah,
but she has the hair and she sort of
the way she stands different. Is really very much of that character, Roz.
Totally.
No, it's not a Julia. I can't remember which season or episode, but somebody calls her a cassowary because of that hair.
Good one.
I just thought that's the best. That's the best ever. A line that I always remember. Great, great characters. And if anybody says, I've just started watching Fisk, I'm a little bit jealous.
Oh, because they're experiencing
they get to,
it.
Yeah,
from
they
the
get
beginning.
To it. They've got three seasons. Yeah, great show. Mm. I hope it becomes as popular here as I hope it becomes as popular overseas as it is here, because I think especially in the UK people would really like
oh, yeah.
that sense of humour.
And it should translate, really.
Yeah,
I mean,
there's
nothing specifically Australian
no.
about it. There's a couple of things. It's spent in Melbourne, you know, very coffee related. And,
yeah,
you know,
true.
Some of the storylines of the households, I guess, are a little bit Australian, but I love the dad King. Character as well. The judge and his, yes. and his boyfriend. Is it Victor? I think it is.
Yeah.
Just this real bitchy sort of, you know.
He's got so many rules.
Yeah, so many rules. That's right. He's measuring up the backyard to make sure that the guest house is legitimate and she yep. can stay there. I'm just like, oh, my God.
So annoying.
But, yeah.
That's their yoga room. Well, you've got a whole yeah. house. Yeah. Oh, far out. Number three for you, Steph.
So my number three, and I did whether this would be in my top five, ooh, but it ended up at number three.
Middle, okay.
I know it was released to mixed reviews, but I enjoyed it, and it was The Perfect Couple. So Netflix's drama that starred a massive cast, Nicole Kidman,
oh, that one. Liev Schreiber, yes.
Eve Hewson, the list goes on and on and on and on. It's a murder mystery. So a little bit, you know, it follows that same sort of, I guess, arc with
who done it. It was definitely her. No, it was him. Yes. It was that one.
Very, very, very not much dead. Like that. And I think that's what kept it driving, because every episode you were convinced it was this person. Yeah. And that's exactly what that episode was intending to do, was to lead you down the garden path. What I found really interesting was, I think it was maybe not until maybe episode two that you even found out who died. So you knew pretty quickly someone had died, a body had been found.
Kind of like White Lotus.
True. And it does have that same sort of feeling. I mean, the lavish, because this is set in, I think it's up in Massachusetts. Was it Rhode Island?
Oh, like a little island, isn't it?
Yeah.
Nantucket,
that's it. A family of, you know, supreme wealth, generational wealth at their beach house, their summer house, and they're hosting a very lavish wedding. So obviously everyone's there, family, friends, acquaintances. And the day of the wedding, a body washes up on the beach and it all goes from there. I think the thing that really got me was how intricate the characters were. There was not one character that was a bit kind of like, didn't really need that storyline. Like every single one, they nailed it.
Yeah, cool.
There was the background to the characters. There was reason to question and suspect
every
them.
Single one.
Every
that's
single
good.
One of them.
Yeah.
But there were the hidden connections between each character. And the very end, and I won't give any spoilers away, but it was a perfect answer. It made perfect sense, but you didn't quite guess them the whole way through. Like there was a little bit of suspicion.
Do you still remember?
I do. Okay. So come watch it again. Yeah, not yet anyway.
No,
give me 12 months.
Okay. Fair enough. So you watched it, Mick, because that was one that I wanted to watch and then didn't.
Really?
Mm. Yeah, definitely watched it and really enjoyed it too. And it's an easy, pretty easy watch.
Yeah.
But you hate all the characters. It's not one of these shows where you can't like anybody. It'll be like White Lotus too, where it's really hard to like warm to them. But you hate watch it. We watch it because you just want to see them crumble. You want to see them all fall apart.
You're absolutely right. There was not one character that you're like, oh, I quite like them.
I hope they didn't do it.
I hope they didn't do it because I'm on their side. You're like, I hate these people so much. But I feel like that's what the detectives were like when they arrived at the house.
They don't like anyone.
Is this place? Like, who lives here? These people are awful.
They're the worst.
And it had a really good theme song though. And I remember seeing things about the director suddenly just surprising the cast, saying, here's a dance routine, you all need to learn it. And they all immediately like went to their agents and were all went into panic stations and saying, no, we're refusing to do it.
Really?
We're not dancing. It doesn't make
any
Hollywood.
Sense. So Hollywood.
And the director saying, no, this is what we're doing. And I do remember Nicole Kidman saying, she refused to dance as herself, but she danced as her character. And when you watch it back, you go, oh, yeah, Yeah, she's dancing as a character.
what a stipulation, though. Right? It just has to be that.
Yeah.
That's so funny. My number three is also a Netflix series. I thought maybe Steph would have this one. It's called Nobody Wants This.
This is my number one.
Oh, okay.
You stole brilliant. It.
Okay.
You stole
it. Had to happen. It had to happen.
Yeah. It had to happen.
Kristen Bell, Adam Brody, just a show that I think I watched in a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
It was just so easy to watch. And it was good. It was really good. I really thoroughly enjoyed it. But I think the fact that it was so easy to watch has left that lasting memory in my mind.
Yes.
Of just I had a really good time.
Good experience.
Yeah.
I laughed. Mm. I honestly cried. I had moments where I went, this show is so well written. And I think the magic was that essentially it's a rom-com, yeah. You know, a couple meets and they have some issues and do they stay together, do they don't stay together. But it was done at an adult level because there was that sort of idea. They're in their mid-30s. It's that kind of make or break time. One of them's just out of a relationship. There's issues against differing religions, differing upbringings. But they're not 21 and they're not 24. And, you know, when you watch those rom-coms and they're 24, you kind of go like, it doesn't really matter. Like, who cares? Mm. You know, you're straight out of college. Does it matter? These guys just had a level of genuine about them that you went, this is real. And their acting was flawless. It made you like them. You were rooting for them, weren't you? And I remember thinking when I was watching it, I don't want the episode where they – inevitably break up to come.
Yep. Yeah,
I
have
just
that rhythm.
Want to root for them. I just want to watch them do normal life because they're clever, they're hilarious, they're secondary characters of their family and their siblings are absolutely hilarious.
That's something that I thought about with it is that if it was a film, it would just have to do those beats, the rom-com storyline beats. But because it was a series, they were able to explore other sections, have time to talk about the awkwardness or not the awkwardness, but like the somewhat friction with their religions or different characters. And it didn't feel like they were just stretching it out.
Not at all.
It felt like it had given them the chance to make it something different to a normal rom-com movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I liked it.
You sold it for me. I've got to watch it. I haven't seen it yet.
It'd be a great summer watch, actually, I reckon.
Yeah,
very easy to watch. What are we up to? Gosh,
number two.
Okay.
Number two. And funnily enough, we're actually throwing back a little bit to Saturday Night Live again. Because this is a documentary with Will Ferrell and Harper Steele.
I haven't watched this, but I'm so interested.
So Harper Steele had a transition, gender transition. Harper was a writer on Saturday Night Live and worked with Ferrell and has known him for 30 years and then called Will up one day and said, I'm now a woman. And Will didn't have any idea. No one did. Harper rang around all of the people that she knew and told them that he was now a she. And obviously, Will, shocked and surprised. He sort of reacted and the doco was really, really nice and really honest. And then they meet up and they talk and they said, this is amazing. We're friends. We should, show people what it's like to find out about somebody who's transitioned at an older age that you've known for a long time. So they decided to do a trip across America in the car and just stop off at certain points around the country which are significant to Will and Harper and film the whole thing while they're driving. They stop off in like car parks or Walmart supermarket, garage lots and drink beer and just chat. And Will asks all the big questions, and Harper answers the way that, she really honestly just does. It's such a real documentary and it's really, really beautifully done. So much so that some of the scenes that they film sort of got in the news because they go to like a steakhouse and Will's there and obviously it's Will Ferrell. Everyone's freaking out and getting really excited. And Will's doing this like steak eating challenge and it sort of accidentally makes it about himself. But Harper Steele is right there. And then all these people are filming it going, oh, who's this person that Will's with?
Mm.
And it became like an issue because they're in sort of like the deep south and they all get pretty funny down there. And then they started getting a lot of hate towards Harper. And it was really quite awkward and really sad to see that reaction from people that realized that Will was with a transsexual woman. And in the end of the day, the whole doco is just really, really nice, but it does also make you really quite sad that someone has to live their life in a different way for so long because they don't feel like they can be who they want to be. there's a really great bit where they want a theme song
for the doco.
For the doco, yes. So they call up all their Saturday Night Live mates, you know, and trying to get one of them to record a song. And now I'm trying to remember who the person was that did the actual song in the end. I want to say it's not Molly Shannon, but Kristen Wiig. Maybe it's Kristen Wiig.
Okay.
And I think Kristen Wiig writes a song and then they play it at the very end of the doco. It's hilarious. It's amazing. But the way they all sit down and have dinner and everyone knows. And it's just, yeah, really, really nice but also sad documentary to watch. And seeing Will Ferrell in that sort of light as well, like you sort of just see him as a complete, you know, he's always on. Like
yeah, he's always like on.
Yeah, a bit of a larrikin.
He's always on.
Never but he's sort of.
Yeah, he's a larrikin. But even in this show, like you get to see a bit of a real side of Will Ferrell, which that's is really cool. Nice. And he just seems like a really decent human, you know.
Nice.
And that's nice to see.
Yeah,
it's really nice to watch.
That was when Will Ferrell was in, it was kind of around the time that, like we were watching SNL a lot, you know, and a lot of the skits that I, when I think back to some of my favorite characters, it's him with, what was her name? Sherry O'Terry, I think. Molly Shannon, like you said, like all of that, that for me is one of my favorite eras of SNL. And to know that, you know, this documentary is about one of the writers who came up with and created all of these skits that we really enjoyed. And I still think about them to this day. When I saw that this documentary was a thing, I was interested. So I'm glad to hear that you really enjoyed it. Cause I think I might have to put it on my list for sure now of the definite watchers.
Yeah, definitely watch it. It's just on Netflix.
Perfect.
Only came out a few months ago, but worth it.
Easy.
Nice.
Number two for you.
My number two. Now, talking about you started Fisk when season 3 was coming out, that is my philosophy of when it's great to start a new season, a new series. Is when there is another season coming out because you know that when you start season 1, you're going to enjoy
it. Yeah, that's right.
So I started a show called Based on a True Story. It's a comedy kind of drama, murder mystery type thing, and I started it like a week before season 2 came out. And I thought, this is great. So I just travelled straight from season 1 into season 2. Now, it has the sort of feeling, the sort of comedy like Santa Clarita Diet.
Yeah, I know that vibe. What's the one with
Christina Applegate?
Oh.
Death. Forgotten that, sorry.
The Death Becomes? No, Death. No.
Death Like Me or something. I know what you mean. The one. Yeah. With the pool, the swimming pool.
Yes,
yeah. And the grief group.
And what's his name? Marsden.
That's James. It. So it has that sort of vibe to it. So it's got Kaylee Cuoco, whose name I can never say.
You said it with confidence.
I said it with confidence. She is married to a guy who is, I guess, just constantly living in his own shadow. He used to be what was going to be a very successful tennis player, had injuries, and his professional tennis career never really took off. And so he's a tennis coach at one of those fancy schmancy LA sort of Orange County country clubs. And she's a real estate agent but really doesn't want to do it. But she's an absolute true crime podcast buff. That's what she lives and breathes. They make friends with a guy, and by talking to this guy, she discovers that he is the serial killer that is on the run, and nobody can figure out who he is.
She's cracked the case.
And she cracked it in like one conversation. So they sort of essentially blackmail him into doing a podcast So the whole show is about these amazing true crime podcasts that happen and get signed up for multi-million dollar deals. And she's like, this is it. This is how we are going to change our lives. And they blackmail the serial killer to do the podcast about himself. However, he wants creative rights over it. And so
it almost sounds a bit Only Murders in the Building.
Yeah, a little bit, a little bit. It's so funny, and there are so many moments where you do laugh out loud and you go, I should not be laughing at that.
It's about murder.
It's about murder. It has a bit of a disjointed reality in some parts where it tricks you as a viewer and you go, did that actually happen?
Oh, sort of like in Bridget Jones' Diary where you see her imagining that what happened but didn't really happen.
Exactly it. I found it so, so, so entertaining, and I've quite enjoyed watching Kaylee Cuoco's career because she had such amazing success in Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, I didn't know her outside of that show. Flight Attendant was brilliant.
And I feel like she just cracked that thing of not being pigeonholed into the ditzy blonde on a TV sitcom. The Flight Attendant was so different. This is another one, and to me, I think her acting was spot on. I couldn't critique her in any other way than amazing.
She's
in
got
this.
A bit of a Christina Applegate vibe, don't you reckon?
Yeah, she does. Yeah. She really does. It's a good one. Based on a true story. So there are two seasons. Second one has just come out. So if you feel like
you'll be
a
part of the conversation
series. This would be it.
Hey, Steph, am I right in thinking you had the Flight Attendant as one of your top five when it came out?
I probably did. Because that was one where I watched it and it was not what I was expecting.
Yeah, right. Yes.
I can't get enough of this.
It was a good show. My number two, I was fighting with it and my number one, and then it dropped to number two because I was kind of like, not pros and conning, but I was kind of going, well, what made me enjoy the two different? So this one is number two, but so close to number one, it's touching, is Shogun, which was on. I thought it was 2023, but it wasn't. It came out, I think, in January of 2024. It was a show about the olden days in Japan and how people from other parts of the world want to try and get in on the Japanese action. I'm talking Portuguese, Dutch. It's an Englishman who finds himself there, and he gets so swept up in being captured, and they take his boat, his ship, boat, ship, yacht. No, it's a boat. It's a ship. It's, oh, ye olde ship. And then somehow just becomes part of whole politics of Japan at that time, and it is so beautifully filmed. It is such an amazing story. It's based on a book, and some of the acting in there is just top notch. And someone who stole the series from me, she's a New Zealander as well, but she's from Japanese heritage, and I would love to speak. Actually, I should ask someone who is fluent in Japanese whether they could tell, because she. I mean, I'm imagining she's speaking a very formal version of Japanese, kind of like we would speak Shakespearean if we were in a ye olde English production. But I want to know how well she nailed that, because she learned all of the etiquette and how you walk.
Is this Anna Sawai?
Yes, nice. She's amazing.
She moved to Japan at the age of 10, so I'm guessing she's had a lot of experience. She was born in New Zealand, though. Yeah.
She was phenomenal. I saw an interview of her. I think she was in the US, and she had an American accent, which really confused me. Now maybe that's why, maybe she didn't have that New Zealand accent because maybe she relearned. I don't know, but she was phenomenal in it, in and amongst other amazing performances. But if you like historical settings and you like Japan, this is the show for you.
So this is the thing, Leah, when I talk about what is getting home and watching a show, I always think, I've always been meaning to start watching Shogun. Like, I've been meaning to watch it for 6 months. But you sort of get sit down and you go, oh, do I want to watch a historical Japanese drama?
I'm too tired. I can't concentrate.
I'll rewatch you.
But I've got to do it.
Yeah.
You've convinced me.
Okay.
Get onto it.
You have to. You have to. And you also have to tell us, drum roll, please. I can't drum roll. I've got no drum roll. I'll put it in. What is your number one?
Okay. Well, it was huge when it came out and then it sort of died off and everyone went, eh.
Yeah.
But when it came out, it was huge and I still think about it a lot. And it's Baby Reindeer.
That was on my honourable
mention. Is that on your list?
Yes. Okay. It went on, off, on. I agree.
I nearly didn't put it on because I thought, it's a bit too obvious or it's a little bit too popular or something. But I think it's safe to say the world was pretty obsessed with this show.
Yes.
It was fascinating.
Yeah. And I didn't realise when the show was on, that the guy, Richard Gadd, was the guy that it was like based on.
It was his
like
story.
It was him.
Yeah.
His true story. Well, I'll put true in quotes because we're not allowed to say it's true anymore.
Yeah.
But he acts as he's doing stand-up comedy in the show. He's betraying, saying he meets this woman in the bar where he works, offers her a tea. She gets infatuated with him. We all know the storyline. I'm presuming almost everyone's probably seen this show. But it just sucked you in so much because it felt very real. And then I didn't realize it sort of was. Like it was based on a true story. I feel like there's a few things that were maybe exaggerated in the show, which I won't, if you haven't seen it, then I suppose I don't want to spoil it, but it's just sometimes the lengths that Martha went to sort of infiltrate the life of the main character, Donnie Dunn, were just, I was just like, really? Is that really true? Is that
bit of a stretch?
But maybe it is. So obviously since the show came out, there's been court cases and the real Martha has come out and said, this is not real. And Netflix is, I'm not sure what the actual result of the case is, whether they have to pay money or what, but it's basically being sued for damages and stuff. But I think that's sort of representative of the fact that this show really just touched a nerve and was really just very, very interesting, really, really well played, and it sucked you in. It was perfect TV. I loved it.
I think it was perfect TV because it was messy. Neither character was likable. They were very flawed, both of them. But you couldn't quite, side with Donnie, even though you were supposed to. You kind of kept going like,
because he kept on doing it to himself.
You make really bad decisions, buddy. Really bad decisions.
And I like that he did that because I like, obviously he's written this show from his perspective, from his story, but it shows that he recognises that he was pretty crazy to keep going back to this person and keep getting sucked back in.
Yeah,
but
true.
There's sort of deeper reasons behind that. And like you say, we're all flawed and I guess he should have really highlights that. But the character, Jessica Gunning, who plays Martha Scott, amazing. Like he's so convincing and so real that you're just like, whoa, you see her out of character and you go, oh, wait, she's not Martha? Like,
I'm worried, I'm scared of you. Oh, no, it's fine. You're just an actress.
I do feel the court case did put a bit of a dampener on it and especially on her performance because she obviously was not there when the original things were happening.
Yeah, sure.
But for her to have that performance was pretty spectacular.
But what talking about the court cases and stuff, and I think that was another aspect that sucked you in, is that it was real and that the real characters were talking. The story didn't end with the last episode.
True.
And speaking of people who are into true crime podcasts, you could do a bit of a dig and everything.
But it worked because, of course, the real Martha came forward.
Of course she would. It was always going to be what happened. Of course. She was that person anyway. Yeah. Like that's the kind of, great pick. Funnily enough, it was recommended to me again only recently.
Have you not seen it?
No, I have. Oh. But it was recommended to me again on Netflix. It was, I saw it come up in like the top whatever things that you should I don't know. You know how they've got different categories.
Mm.
It's forgotten that you've watched it.
I know, yeah, it has, it has. It's been that long ago.
Do you remember what happened? That would should be that category.
Would you like to watch Fisk?
Rewatch to see what happens. Who is the murderer?
Now, I stole your number one, but you stole my number one. You've got a couple of honourable mentions.
I've got two honourable mentions, and I really hope that they're actually from 2024 now that I think about it. But I won't go into the big synopsis, but The Veil with Elizabeth Moss.
Oh,
she's a spy.
Yeah, that was this year.
Yes,
that was really good,
really captivating.
And you didn't know who to believe, who to trust, never. And if they believed or trusted each other the whole time.
Mm.
Great show. Yeah, I forgot about that one.
She did a fantastic
English accent,
flawless.
Yeah, she was on the.
Where's she from? What's her accent?
She's American.
Yeah.
Far out.
Yeah.
I guess she's in Handmaid's Tale, but yeah.
Yeah, she. Look, there were a few handmade moments. You know the handmade moments where they zoom in on.
Yeah, I'm going to look at
she's got
crazy eyes.
The most incredibly beautiful blue eyes, and there were a few shots exactly like that. Mm-hmm. That when they went, is this written into her contract, or
I think it is.
Is it just so captivating?
I noticed those.
The director
as well.
Feels like I just have to do a zoom in on her eyes.
It's Elizabeth Moss. There you go.
Yeah. That's beside the point. And my last one was Joan, which starred
Sophie Turner.
That's it, Sophie Turner, and it was based on a real woman whose name is Joan. I can't remember her last name.
I thought, just judging by the poster, I said this already in an earlier episode, but I thought it was about Joan Rivers. It's not. It's about some English woman.
I think arguably the best or worst jewellery thief in all of UK history. And it's
not
a
Joan
woman
Rivers.
Named Joan, not Joan Rivers. Mm. It was a really fantastic production as well.
My number one is, man, we didn't actually have that many crossovers. It is Fallout, the TV show.
Hey!
Yeah, I had to. It was further down on my list until I started thinking about, where I should put each series or movie. And I thought this one, I was genuinely looking forward to each episode because it was coming out once a week, and I was genuinely waiting, and I knew what day it was coming out, and I would stay off any social media on that day because I wanted to enjoy it myself.
There you go.
And, you know, it's based on a game series that a lot of people have either played or know. And I thought it was amazing the balance that they did between showing little Easter eggs for if you know, you know, if you've played it, you know, you know. And also, if you don't know, it doesn't matter because we're doing our own storyline, sort of. I mean, they did borrow bits and pieces from, I think, mainly Fallout 3, but I think there's a bit of Fallout New Vegas in there as well. But the way that they kept flashing back to explain what happened, who was involved in how atomic bombs went off, who is this war against, you know, how did America get like this? And playing the games, I'm like, oh, yeah, there's something about, like, Liam Neeson's character. He's like the dad and he went missing or I can't remember. But it didn't matter because they had their own storyline that they were going on. And, you know, there's this ghoul who is actually a main character where ghouls, apart from the odd one or two, are just like these mindless things that scream at you when you go down into the subways of in Fallout. I'm really looking forward to the next season. They have said that there will be another one. And I would be surprised if there aren't a lot of people who are picking up Fallout to play either for the first time or again just to sort of get back into that world again because they made it an inviting place to explore. Yeah, it was
cool. I mean, watch it, and I do like the game. I've played Fallout 3 and Vegas, and I don't know why I haven't gone to this show. I think it's more because, you know, my wife and I don't always have the same taste in
shows,
so it's probably not one we'd both watch together.
Yeah,
but
that's fair.
When I got some time on my hands, I'll watch this.
Geez, we have really given each other long lists of things to watch, but stuff that I'm looking forward to watching. Mick, it has been so fun catching up with you again.
Thanks for having me again.
Definitely a good way to kick off a new year, I'd say. Yeah, having
definitely.
A catch up. giving each other a massive list of things to watch and remembering things that we did watch. Like, oh, I remember watching that one. So on that note, Mick, thank you very much.
25 is a square number.
Hey!